Well, my next guest is part of our Lit Fest extravaganza tonight. She will be with Samantha and others on a panel at Jones High School Auditorium tomorrow morning at 10:30. It is sold out. Congratulations. I don't know if that is, that's a congratulations. Sachi Cole is the author of a collection of essays called One Day We'll All Be Dead and None of This Will Matter. In the book, Cole talks about her life growing up in Canada, her relationship with her parents, dating, and of course, living life online. In Cole's first book, this is Cole's first book. She's also a culture writer for BuzzFeed. She's contributed to the New York Times, New Yorker, Jezebel, currently lives in Toronto. Sachi Cole, thanks for being here. Good to meet you.
Thanks for having me.
I'm a fan
me.
Of your work.
Oh, thank you. I like it.
I mean, I've always liked your work at BuzzFeed, and this book is a great combination of a lot of things that we can relate to, but also with your kind of with your humor.
So thanks. Great. That's nice of you to say.
So let's talk about this. You've done so much in the form of online journalism and commentary.
Yeah.
What brings you to the idea of writing essays?
I like the idea of an essay being in a book because you kind of get to do it in a vacuum. When you publish something online, you write this thing and you shoot it into the world, and then 500 people come back to you and are like, here are all of my complaints with this thing you wrote in detail with profanity, incredibly thoughtful profanity.
Misspelled profanity.
Yeah. Of course. Right. I mean, listen, they put a lot of work into it. I'd never say that they didn't. But with this, there's kind of an entry fee to screaming at me, which I like that idea. I think you should pay me to yell at me. And now finally, I have it distilled.
You have such a tremendous voice online. And I mean, as much as you joke around about it, I mean, a lot of your work has been, you will put something on Twitter and then just the trolls just come out.
Hours
I mean,
of
just,
my life lost.
I mean, it really is. It's surprising. We're going to get into it because I want to talk about that part of your life. I mean, you start the book. You know, in an essay about anxiety, and you realize as you go through it, it's almost like a start. The tone of the book changes in the way that the first piece is about you don't like to fly, and you talk about anxiety, and then it gets a little bit lighter and fun, and then it gets serious when you talk about online harassment. Why start the book right off the bat with your, I guess your battle with anxiety?
Well, why waste your time? Like, why lull you into this false sense of security? Like, you're going to read this book and it's like a beautiful exploration of how glorious the human condition is. No, this book is about all the things I hate. And that is the point of it. But I think anxiety is a good place to start because I think that essay isn't just about anxiety, but it's about inheriting it from my mother.
Right.
And I think a lot of the book is about the stuff that I pulled from my parents, willingly or not. That's, I think, the best place to start from is because who gives you garbage before your mom? Like, who gives you all of your damage and your frustration and everything that makes you bad before your mother? No one. It's always your mom.
It's always your mom. I mean, for you, I mean, was the idea to, did you have to discover that with when, if you're talking about anxiety or you're talking about dating or you're talking about shopping, as you're writing these essays, do you discover the thread of sort of the garbage that's given, that's handed down?
No, I'm like a garbage person. I live there, so I generally accept that everything is bad. So really what it was about was finding another narrative thread to pull it together so it isn't just a catalog of my nightmares, which I could do handily, but I don't know how much people want to read that.
When you set out to do a collection of essays that are called One Day We'll All Be Dead and None of This Will Matter, Do you set out with a theme? Do you set out with, okay, this is, like you just said, these are things that I hate. I mean, is that the concept? Or do you sort of, you know, is it more organic where you write stuff and then almost like a running order, you piece it together?
I think there's 10 essays in the book, and I think of those 10 essays, it's 10 themes that I've been thinking about for a long time. The original title of the book was The Pursuit of Misery, and that's what we worked with for most of the time that
Why'd
we were working
it?
On the book. Because I think we got to the end and we realized it just didn't make any sense. Like, The Pursuit of Misery would be good for, like, that felt like a catalog of being unhappy, which I think is like maybe a book I'll write one day. But it didn't feel quite right for something that ended up being kind of emotionally fraught and complicated and had stories in there that just weren't funny. Some of them are not that funny, and some of them are only funny.
Well, you have to find, I mean, especially with you write with such humor online, do you have to almost sandwich some of the real in this book or the stuff that might be more emotional with humor? I mean, do you use humor in a way to soft land people who might for the first time be learning something about you that's real?
No, I think of it as the other way around. I think of it as like, I'm going to lull you in and I'll tell you a really good joke about my vagina. And then once you're in the room, I'm going to kick you in the face. Like, I don't think you need to be like, I don't think you need to soften the landing. I actually want it to be worse.
All right.
So I'm a lot of fun. A lot of fun at parties.
Sacha Cole is my guest tonight. Her debut book, One Day We'll All Be Dead and None of This Will Matter. It's a collection of essays out now. She's at the Printers Row Lit Fest tomorrow morning, 10:30, which the show is sold out. She'll be with Samantha Irby and others. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation with Sacha Cole. Stay with us. All right, it's The Download, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me tonight, writer Sacha Cole. Her book, One Day We'll All Be Dead and None of This Will Matter. She is at the Printers Row Lit Fest tomorrow morning. She's in the same panel as Samantha Irby, which is sold out. But she's in town. This is her first time to Chicago.
Yeah, I've never been, which is a shame because it's like an hour flight from Toronto.
I know, you're in Toronto. It's crazy. What do you think? What, I mean, you've only been here for, what, a day
I've
now?
I've been here for about 15 hours. I really like it. It's a beautiful city. Everyone is just the right level of rude that makes me comfortable, but not so rude that I'm like, what's happening? I was in Portland recently and everyone was very polite and it stressed me out.
It threw
I was not comfortable with that. And I had deep dish for the first time today.
And did you like it?
It was the best thing I've ever eaten. And I feel like I'm going to die.
Yeah.
I'm full of so much dairy and meat and unidentifiable sauces.
It's definitely a Chicago thing.
I love
and
it.
I think at a certain point, I don't want to take you off your high because you seem really high.
I'm a little
It's
dopey.
Something that I think the Chicago, like people who live here, they get to a certain point where they're like, all right.
Well,
I'll go
I understand
I'll go with the
that. Fair enough. Yeah, but like Toronto's food is a pea meal bacon sandwich and it is the most grotesque thing I have ever eaten. And people talk about it like it's like a great thing to bring to the rest of the world. It's humiliating. I hate it. At least you guys have like an actual thing. We have like a weird bacon sandwich.
Yeah.
It's not good.
We have weird bacon sandwiches. There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but is it like the only thing you have? Like this is the thing that we're clinging to.
We have a sandwich called the Gym Shoe.
What's that?
And I'm not even sure. It's just a lot of meat.
Oh,
and
that sounds nice.
And then there's the Horseshoe, right? And the Horseshoe is down in Springfield, Illinois, which is a couple hours south, which is another thing that's just a lot of meat. It's meat and cheese. Meat and cheese.
You know what? America's incredible. You guys put every animal in everything.
Yeah.
I love it.
For you, I mean, we talk about the essays in your book. Yeah. And one of the big areas that I want to talk about is you kind of talk about at 13 years old getting a chance to be on the internet for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
And
what a mistake that was.
But I mean, it's really interesting to me because you have created a persona and a livelihood being a writer for digital news and digital things like BuzzFeed or Jezebel, like I mentioned in the beginning. But the idea that at 13 you sort of not only – Were you introduced to the internet, but you were introduced to online harassment right away, which just wasn't called that.
Yeah. No, we just said it was like what you got. Like we just considered it like that's what comes with being on the internet. That's what you get with
this
access.
This is early 2000s, right.
This was, yeah, when I was 13 in 2000.
Three, I think it was.
Four.
Four, okay.
Yeah. Oh, God. That doesn't sound that far away. Anyway, we'll deal with that later. But yeah, I mean, I was on this social network called Nexopia, and it was this weird micro network that was really popular in British Columbia, Alberta, and then like weird parts of Europe. And it was just teens crawling with teenagers who were just awful to each other. So the same dynamics that would sort of be happening in your junior high or your high school were happening,
were happening online.
Right. And then the only difference was that you could capture them. Like you could take a screen grab of how these dynamics were playing out. And it scares me because it's been such a long, to me, it feels like a very long time since that. And I feel like I'm still playing those games in some way.
What you point out in the essay is that it's less about technology. It's more about human nature, whether it's happening in the school and it's a popularity contest. It almost mirrors what's happening on Nexopia or whatever it's called. And again, with your life, and I want to talk about that, the idea that every time that you write anything and you'll do it in your voice, there seems to be just a tremendous amount of pushback from the internet world to argue, debate, and just kind of rip apart for fun. It's not even at any point constructive. It's just for fun.
No. There used to be a time when people didn't know what I looked like, and they didn't know I was a woman. And so they would respond to my work very differently. I remember I used to get emails that were, if they disagreed with me, they were these really long, thoughtful emails that were a lot about the ideas that were in the piece and why they disagreed with them and what they wanted me to hear. As soon as I put a photo up, this is why for my avatar on Twitter is a photo of me when I was one, because it's kind of like an unidentifiable like child ball. Like there's nothing really gendered about it, but I left that.
But once the gender is identified,
then I get messages that are purely attacks on my character or on my body or on my existence. There's this real clear shift in how people talk to me. It's also clear if they can identify that I'm not white. That's the other thing that also tips the balance, is that if they think I'm a white guy, just with like a weird name, they're like probably they're dismissive, certainly, because they disagree and they want to have a fight. But as soon as it's like, oh, no, it's a brown lady and I'm Canadian, which adds this like layer of like they think I don't know what I'm talking about, then it is just the emails don't make any sense. I had a guy send me an email saying that it was my fault that his mother committed suicide. Like, this is the level of discourse I'm having with some of these people who read my work. It's just it's impossible.
You
to
talk about
with.
Some of the specifics in the book, especially about online harassment, where, you know, there are a couple times where you would put pieces out or have on Twitter, and the pushback, the brushback, the amount of response, I mean, it would keep you up at night. It would take you into emotional places based on the fact that it was just a nonstop, thread and stream of hate in your direction.
Yeah, I think the stuff that it became impossible to ignore was when my family started getting dragged into it. So I had a version of my internet life long before I was really working and writing successfully anywhere. And when I had that life, my internet felt kind of private. It was just this little dumb thing I had with my idiot friends, and we just mostly talked to each other.
And nothing went viral, and it was just for the moment.
No, it was just mine. And
that's how the internet was, right?
Right, and because I had learned these things when I was 13, that all the stuff that I put on the internet at 13 never really came back to me in any tangible way. It like might have sparked a fight briefly, but I'm not carrying any of it. But I had posted photos of my niece and I had posted information about myself that now I would never do. And the tilt was that then I remember people were sending me notes about my niece. She's biracial. And there was a lot of talk about how she was a mutt and how we were a self-loathing family and we brought in white blood because we needed it. Like the conversation tilted very quickly and it stopped being about me.
And this was all about your opinions on either social media or stuff that you wrote.
Yeah, a lot
journalism.
Of it is because I believe in affirmative action. That's the root of a lot of it, is that I think affirmative action is a thing we should at least consider. Mm-hmm. Quotas are not great, but like I think it's something that should be in everybody's head.
And you're not alone.
It's a policy that's been in place for a very long time. And like, I'm also saying this as like a Torontonian, where Canadians love to brag about being multicultural. We are horny for saying it. We think it makes us really great. And it's so interesting that this thing that we carry around is the superiority complex, especially in comparison to the U.S. As soon as somebody actually says something measurable about it, everybody freaks out.
Why do you think that is? I guess I get the understanding. If you don't like the concept of affirmative action, you're going to speak up about it. But in your case, and it's documented in a lot of other cases, and like you said, unfortunately, it has a lot to do with gender and race, there just seems to be an overpowering desire to be rude, to troll, to make it personal, and to do whatever they can to mess up your life.
Because there's nothing else you can do. You can't fight with me with logic, because if you could, you would do that. But the people who argue with me on a personal level, it is because there is no logical argument to be had. If you could have that logical argument, we would have had it by now.
Right.
We would have already engaged
in
that.
And you'd entertain.
And I would entertain it happily. Right. Look, my dumb job is screaming at people on the internet all day. I'll happily engage with you if you can make one cogent argument. But they can't. So the thing that they're going to hit at, I'm fat, or I'm ugly, or they'll make a comment about how my white boyfriend is colonizing me. That's a cute one. Like, there's all these dumb things that they'll throw because they just don't have any actual meat.
And at a certain point, you made the decision to get off of social media.
I deactivated my Twitter account for 2 weeks, which absolutely made it worse.
What was that like? Why? Yeah. Talk about that.
Because I think I left because I just didn't want to look at it anymore, and I didn't have the tools to not engage with Twitter while it was still active. So I was like, okay, well, you know what I'll do? I'll just turn it off and then everything will go away.
Right.
But it doesn't work like that. So I turned it off and then immediately everybody on this other side looked at it as a win, that I had ceded land and they were going to take, as if this is like tangible property, as if I had given them acres and now they were encroaching on us, wow. Like whatever that's supposed to mean. And it was worse for a period. Then they just started emailing me because they couldn't get in touch with me on Twitter.
Sasha, you did a tremendous job of making that story relatable and humorous.
Thanks.
It's light, but it's a very serious and emotional story.
Yeah,
the idea of people taking an argument that's supposed to be in the intellectual realm and making it personal and doing it until you leave.
Yeah. I mean, I came back.
I know.
I came back. But I think that's the thing I think a lot of women in particular and women of color on Twitter are struggling with. It doesn't feel like a safe platform. Twitter doesn't care and they're not doing anything to help anybody. We don't want to do this, but we don't want to give up. And I especially personally, I feel like that was my space. I grew up on the internet.
Yeah,
that
right,
was
right.
I know how this
it's
thing
yours.
Works.
Yeah,
and it
right.
feels like it's mine. And then I've got these people who are saying, no, you don't get to have it because I need more. As a white man, I need to own more things. This too must be in my butt. So they also like need to take this. And it just feels so insulting to me because it's like, okay, well, I don't get money because I'm paid less than white men. I don't get property because I'm a child of immigrants and I always feel a sense of displacement. And so you won't even let me have a digital space to be away from you. You can't even give me that. And so all of us have this weird sense of, well, I don't want to do this anymore. But at the same time, if I leave it, then it's just one more place that gets broken. And then I'm going to find a new thing and they will come for me anyway.
Well, let's continue the conversation. Let's break so we can get an update on tonight's news. Sachi Cole is my guest tonight. She's the author of One Day We'll All Be Dead and None of This Will Matter. essays. She's a culture writer at BuzzFeed, as well as a contributing writer to a slew of places, including the New York Times, New Yorker, Jezebel. Let's take a break. We'll get an update with Rob, and we'll come back and we'll continue the conversation. Stay with us. Well, thank you, Rob. Welcome back to the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's a beautiful night here in the city of Chicago. We are continuing our Lit Fest celebration in studio tonight. Sachi Cole, she is the author of One Day We'll All Be Dead and None of This Will Matter. It's a collection of essays, her debut book. She's going to be at the Lit Fest tomorrow morning, 10:30, over at the one of the auditoriums with Samantha Irby and others, and it's sold out.
I love it when you say it's sold out. That feels
that,
so good.
Because
I know
good.
I had nothing to do with it selling out because no one here knows who I am. But I still
And Samantha, she was funny because she was like, oh, it's free.
It's free.
She got mad. I'm like, what do you care what the price is?
I heard that. I was like, shut up, man.
Shut
be
up.
Cool.
Well, we were talking about, a lot. I mean, you have a ton of essays. I mean, there are 10 essays in this book. But, you'll talk about everything from your family to shopping to we talked about anxiety. Drinking and dating. I mean, there's a lot in there.
Yeah.
And we were just talking about online harassment. I want to stay there just because as you continue to have success in the digital world with your job as being a writer and a journalist and a commentator and being able to have your take on different things on BuzzFeed or what have you, it feels more and more like the internet that you and I both came up with or came up in has changed.
Mm-hmm.
And the rules of, I guess the rules and the regulation or what you can say and what you can't say and how you say it has become regulated.
Yeah.
And we see this a lot we saw it with Kathy Griffin and you wrote a big piece about Kathy Griffin. Mm-hmm. We saw it with others as well I think it was a CNN reporter who said something about Donald
Reza
Trump.
Reza Aslan, he just got canned.
But and we had our own local stories. I mean, Mark Giangreco over at ABC said something about Donald Trump and he was suspended. Mm. And it's gone from this idea of this is my space, this is my, like you mentioned, this little digital space that I own, to something that is monitored.
Yeah.
How does that change the internet? How does that change the way that we, is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing that the rules are changing as we're moving forward?
I think those are two maybe separate conversations. There's one that we're having about sort of how people are going to talk about Trump, who is a president unlike, I think, any you guys have ever seen, and is a president who spreads misinformation
right.
in a crazy way and is an admitted sexual abuser and has made made statements that are sexist and racist. Like, he's in a very particular camp, and the way people who speak out against him are being treated is its own thing. It's a very bizarre, harmful entity unto itself.
Now, I mean, a CNN will, and whether it be ABC or whatever, yeah. I mean, they're going to have a set of employee rules and regulations.
Sure, but those set of rules are not actually being implemented on the other side. Like, they have conservative or Republican spokespeople or pundits
things.
Who say things that are racist or offensive, and they are not removed. Like, I can't remember his name, but there was some ding-dong who's on CNN who made some crack about Chinese food having dog meat in it or whatever. Like, dumb things like that. That guy's still there. Like, I don't think the rules of engagement are spread equally
right.
on
okay.
those camps,
so
and that's its own problem.
I mean, a shift of power has changed the way that criticism is viewed.
Totally.
But the idea of a shifting landscape,
yeah.
and let's talk about it outside of politics.
Yeah.
Let's talk about comedians, because Kathy Griffin was a good point. I mean, mm-hmm. you did a great piece on BuzzFeed not too long ago just about the idea that I think we all agree, and I think the sophisticated approach to that story is this is not a funny joke.
Yeah, it just didn't have a point.
Well, what's the point of having
that know.
Picture?
Her right. argument was so convoluted, and it really felt like one of those things where you get caught with your hand in a cookie jar, and you're like, oh, here's a good excuse.
Right,
yeah,
right.
It was stupid. I don't know if I don't think it merits the response it has merited. That's absurd. But it also didn't mean anything. And I think when we think about comedians or writers or anybody who does anything creative, the rules of engagement have changed, but they should change. Because, like, how long ago was it that you could, like, wear blackface and run around and be funny? That was okay. That was a hilarious joke for a very long time.
Right.
I don't want to live in that place. I'm fine with there being rules about what I can and cannot say anymore.
You've heard older comedians mm-hmm. Talk about how the college circuit, they can't play it anymore because the rule.
Yeah,
no,
you know what?
So
if you will fall apart because a college student tells you that they didn't like your joke, I'm not sure you're set out for this career. If that's the thing that makes you crumble, you probably shouldn't be doing this anyway.
But I mean, I mean, it goes on both sides in the way that we're seeing more and more comedians, and they are veteran comedians who had success with jokes. I mean, mm-hmm. you Kathy Griffin's a great example of look at her weird specials from 10 years ago.
Some of them are really funny and weird, and like she has an incredible,
and also extremely offensive,
really offensive. Like, she had an incredible ability to sort of tell you just a funny story, and you felt like you were sitting like at a slumber party with her, and that's a skill. I can't do that.
Right.
I'm just screaming all the time. That's great, but a lot of her stuff does not age well. And that's fine. Some material will not age well. There are things that I wrote when I was 14 that I would rather die than see the light of day. But that's kind of good.
That's good.
Sarah Silverman said a version of this when her new special, A Speck of Dust, came out. She was doing a lot of interviews. And she said that you should cringe when you look at your old stuff, because mm-hmm. it means that you're improving and you're shifting.
And you use her as an example of somebody who, if you had looked at her work 5, 7, 8 years
ago,
bad. It was so offensive.
It was so brutal.
I mean, that was the whole concept of it. But
yeah.
She's evolved. I mean, even her new special, she still has jokes that are over the top. But
totally.
she has pulled back on the idea of at least push the pushback on what is considered PC.
I think her new stuff feels really thoughtful. And some of it is just the simple act of punching up. I think Sarah Silverman used to punch down a lot mm-hmm. because it was easy. It's easy to be like this cute, like really cute, adorable baby voice Jewish girl saying the N-word.
Right.
I can see why you would do that, because it's an right. easy shot,
right.
but it's punching down.
Right.
It doesn't give anybody anything.
Well, I mean, it's just interesting as we see more and more comedians of a certain age, if it's Kathy Griffin or even Bill Maher, who have
I mean,
had,
Bill Maher has always been bad.
He's always but I mean, think about it. He's been a guy who has made his name on being un-PC.
Yeah.
I mean, this idea that they push.
That was the show, wasn't it? Used to be called Politically Correct.
Right. Politically Incorrect.
Incorrect.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, it just seems that more and more you're seeing it, and it's manifesting itself on social media. Whereas if you're saying something that someone doesn't agree with, or I think of our friend Katie Rich, who's the SNL writer, who said something that was not agreed with, there are repercussions, and the world has changed. It's not just, oh, groan, that's a bad joke. Now everybody wants your head.
I mean, on some level, the internet has become the great equalizer, and there are people who have access to tell you things that didn't have access before, which is good. I would not have the access now 10 years ago. I have now, I would not have that replicated if I had been coming up 10 years ago. I don't think so. I'm glad. I'm glad that there are marginalized people who can now, in a large group, can shift a conversation. I want that to happen. I don't love it when neo-Nazis do it. That's been really troubling to me personally.
But it's the same rules.
But I mean, it does sort of follow a very similar rule. I don't think Nazis are good, so that's where I personally draw a line.
Sure. Right.
We seem to generally be having a weird debate about that. I'm not sure where we're going to end up on it, but I am glad that there's access, but I think we now need to figure out what about the human condition leads us to certain...
Well, as a leading voice, I mean, I consider yourself to be a cutting-edge sort of leading voice in digital media. Do you find yourself evolving with all of the things we just talked about? I mean, even yourself as a young woman evolving and saying the things I did 5 years ago were maybe I was poking the bear or trying different things. I'm evolving and understanding that I have to be much more precise with my arguments or get out of things that I shouldn't be involved in.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, I was telling a friend the other day that I was looking up my Facebook account, my old post, because I got Facebook when I was 15 or 16. Mm-hmm. That's, first of all, too young and gross and bad. And I should have just deleted it when I realized that it was that old. But I was looking at some of the things I had written when I was younger, and they are grotesque. It's language I would never use. And if I knew anybody who would have used those languages, they would be dead to me. But good. I'm glad I know that's
bad
now. So you've
evolved in that way,
of course. And I mean, I think there are arguments I've made in the past that I feel, we're imprecise. But I'm also 26, so I'm still pretty young, and I'm working through a lot of sort of the political arguments that I have and the feelings that I have about the world. But I think the difference is not that you did something bad in the past. It's how you react to it and how you move forward. I think, again, to go to Sarah Silverman, what she's done is she said, this was stupid, and I'm not happy about it. And she did a really good interview where she talked about why she doesn't call anything gay anymore as a pejorative, which she was like a staunch
that
defender.
Thing,
she held on to it for
a long time.
Time.
Well, just like you said, I mean, she loved to throw the N-word around. She loved to to really play with the contradiction of what she looked like, what
and
she sounded like, and what
it's
she
fine.
Says.
It's fine. I have gay friends, and it's not all of them. Like, you don't, not every gay person is your friend. I don't think that's how it works.
Right.
But I think it's really a functionality of what do you do once you've heard and consumed the information? Because I know a lot of people who just say, I don't want to deal with it. I like things the way I like them. So I'd be very curious to see how Bill Maher handles this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's going to happen with Kathy Griffin. That is such a weird
it's terrible what happened to them in terms of the idea that could be career ending with Kathy Griffin. But it also is a statement that she did need to evolve, and she may have missed the point. Where she should have evolved before.
It was just a purposeless gag. And I feel like now, considering the political climate that's happening here, but everywhere at this point, it's so contagious. I feel like we all need to be very careful about the arguments that we're making. And I'm not saying this in terms of tone policing. I don't really care. You say stuff how you want to say them, but you should have a mission in what you're saying.
Does that change the internet? I mean, the internet.
Of course it does. The internet is not a specific machine. People are just spazzing out left, right, and center. Of course. Now this is something that we're really going to have to figure out, because it we're really at a point where everything on the internet is a fight in a really terrifying way. And I don't know what to make of that. And I find it perplexing. I don't live here, so I'm also missing a context, because I step into American internet and I'm like, why is everything on fire? I think generally it's a good lesson. If you're going to engage with a mode of communication that gives you 140 characters, and that when you send it, it can be captured and reposted, and then you lose control of that message, you should be really sure about what you're saying. Really sure.
I'll pitch you on my, I've been, this is my business idea, a new social media platform called Off the Record.
Oh God, I hate it.
you love it. You love it. It's similar to, I haven't figured it all out yet. Uh-huh. I need a name for it, but the idea that you can do anything there and you cannot use it in any other platform, like it's Off the Record.
But why? Then just don't say anything. Shut your mouth and think it privately. Like, why do you need
because
to
I
say
hear, it? I want to hear what, I want to hear the, re, I want to hear what the coach of the White Sox really thinks.
I don't. I don't, because I kind of already have an idea. Like, if you need a platform that gives you free rein to say crazy garbage, I probably have a good idea of what that's going to be anyway. Yeah. Just, you know what? Everybody, myself included, because I am real annoying. We all need to learn to shut up for a minute. I talk too much. All of us say too much stuff. Very shrieky. It's all bad news.
That's probably a great
I
place
hate
to
this
end.
Idea.
I love it.
I
love it. I love the idea that we need to shut up.
Yeah.
All of us need to shut
be
up.
Be quiet. That's my tip for the rest of the year.
The name of the book is One Day We'll All Be Dead and None of This Will Matter. Essays, a collection of essays from Saatchi Kole. She is a BuzzFeed culture writer. She's also done work with The New Yorker, New York Times, Jezebel. She is going to be at the Lit Fest tomorrow with Samantha Irby and others over at the Jones Auditorium. It's sold out, but it's at 10:30. You can go wait around and see if you can get in. Saatchi, it is a pleasure to meet you.
Thanks for having me.
Would love to have you on again at some point when you come through.
Thank you. I had so much fun.